city commerce, but don't have time. Call e-commerce hotline, e-commerce hotline. If you need help to make your store shine, call e-commerce hotline, e-commerce hotline. 888-499-3266. 888-499-3266. Wanna see you win? It's time for you to shine. Call e-commerce hotline, e-commerce hotline.
The e-commerce hotline, brought to you by Bemeyer.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to a new episode of the e-commerce hotline by Bemeyer. I'm your host, Mayor Bianchi, founder of Bemeyer. Bemeyer is a full-service e-commerce development agency based in Brooklyn, New York. And I am joined today by Ari Messer, the founder of Little Data, which is a company that helps your company build their data foundation. And they have been a linchpin of the Shopify ecosystem and a really interesting provider. And so I've brought Ari on today to talk about his founder story, to tell you more about Little Data and what they're doing with brands and ways how they're innovating in the Shopify ecosystem. So welcome, Ari. You know, it's a pleasure to have you. Consider you a good friend of mine in the ecosystem. And so thank you for gracing us with your presence. And why don't you tell the audience a little bit more about yourself and Little Data?
Yeah, awesome. It's exciting to be here. You guys have always, you know, longtime agency partners and do a great job. So, you know, we've done some really interesting projects together. So that makes it extra exciting to be here today. I'm also based in New York. So, I'm the co-founder of Little Data. We started in the UK. So Ed Upton started the company back in the day. We were really early in Shopify. And then I joined him when they were starting to productize what they were doing as analytics consultants. And okay. Everything kind of grew from that. So we launched on Shopify at the end of 2017. And then, long story short, moved back to New York as we started to expand more in North America. And now here we are.
Wow, that's amazing. So would you say that you've seen a lot of changes in the ecosystem in the last 7 years? It's really an exciting climate because for me, like, I've worked with Shopify off and on since 2014. So it's amazing what leaps and bounds it took from the 2014 to 2019 timeline, in my opinion. And then it just kept going from there. So you've obviously been on the earlier side of the wave. So what is it like, you know, being a part of that history and really seeing this ecosystem develop and the company go from what was already a very powerful company to now like a juggernaut and the household name of the e-commerce industry? You ask any random person and they've heard of Shopify. So, totally. You know, what's your perspective on that?
I mean, all the way down to like Subway ads in New York, right? Who would have thought?
Yeah.
We've seen it, yeah, really grow. And I think, in my opinion, a lot of Shopify success has just come through that laser focus on getting the basics of e-commerce right, like online e-commerce, you know, traditionally for digitally native brands, but now we are also seeing a lot more to B2B on Shopify and sort of, you know, more use cases. And it's really just, it's getting those basics right. And I think a lot of us in the ecosystem have built on top of it in order to create more robust, you know, systems on top of the basics of Shopify for those like bigger brands.
Yeah. So you would say that as they have driven demand in the market for upper echelon brands, mid-market, and then now enterprise, that has created more demand for more sophisticated products. And that's where you guys come in terms of better data foundations, as you like to say, and covering the gaps that the basic out-of-the-box analytics integrations or data pipelines, you know, that they cover, you guys go that extra step and really make better server-side tracking and you know, have helped fill those gaps. So it obviously just didn't start where you had this, you know, amazing thing out of the box. What has it been a journey where, you know, you're responding to market demand? Like, obviously, Google Analytics is a huge provider. Facebook, you know, Facebook integration is another big one for you. But then there's also niche providers like Segment.io that you guys are a major connector for people that are looking to pipe data into a CDP. And I believe, you know, that's how we work together. And so, you know, I would say that like from where you are now, which we're going to get into, which I know email and email integrations with the platforms like Klaviyo that people are using is what you're focused on at the moment. But before we get to where we are now, why don't you tell me a little more about your tech journey and like how you came into the e-commerce space? Were you always in e-commerce? Were you in an adjacent industry and ended up in this? Like, because I think what I see when looking at your company is like, it's very, you guys are very, like, you're experts at your subject matter, and it's not something that just happens accidentally. It's a very deliberate process because it's such an esoteric part of the field, yet a very important part of the field. So I've always found that to be really interesting because it's not something you can just like learn in one day. It's very scientifically oriented and it's very deep technically, you know, technical integration. So
totally.
How did this happen?
I mean, you know, we came from a range of backgrounds, but all of us were doing, I would say, consulting with a range of sort of B2B and D2C or like and B2C brands. So, you know, we'd kind of seen what are the overlapping analytics problems, like forget the vertical, forget the industry that everybody has. And some of that was just accurately tracking conversions, you know, trying those back to marketing campaigns, like that actually extends across industry. But then I personally was working with some companies that were building out integrations with Shopify, with Woo, with Salesforce, Commerce Cloud, like what was then Demandware way back, right? And I had seen that when it came to e-commerce, not only were the stakes much higher because you were actually making, you know, purchases and then there was shipping and everything that happened next, but like it was always also worth a lot more to those companies to get all that tracking right. And so,
yes, because they were basing all their decisions on it.
Yeah.
Okay. So, so basically, because data and attribution is kind of a holy grail for brand owners and companies, because, you know, just my experience coming from working at a merchant and being, you know, on the retail side, that was always so important, right? Your profitability, your, you know, where, what advertising is working, what advertising isn't working, not just trying to divine the fates by what time of day it was, is really having a deeper understanding. And so, so the decision was made, I guess, like to form a product, right? And that was because the Shopify ecosystem was something that was like a stable enough foundation to build that product on. And what was it like when you were first getting started?
Yeah, well, you know, in the like early
making
days,
those headways. Yeah.
We experimented a bit with, you know, we did make the, we have now made the decision not to do any kind of reporting in the app and just be more of a data pipeline.
But at first you did, okay.
But at first we did experiment a bit with that. We were still building out custom reports, some sort of basically embedding what was then Data Studio into the app.
Got it.
But, you know, we found that actually what it's all about, like I think many of us who've been on like some sort of founder journey, right? Like you have to really listen to the customers and not only listen, but like get on calls with them, see how they're using the data and understand how everything fits together. And so we had requests for certain things like embedded dashboards in the app that actually nobody needed. So what they were really doing with the data was, you know, getting an accurate idea of marketing channels that converted and then sort of an unbiased view, but then pushing that data back to build better audiences, to like improve retargeting, reduce CAC, you know, understand what kind of subscribers are more likely to like convert in different types of campaigns. So it was like over the years, we still, I guess, had the same foundation, but we moved away from any kind of reporting or buyer personas to data directly for action. Just like push it back. A lot of these brands use the same types of destinations. You know, even our shared customers that have used Segment, like Twilio Segment, that we've done those builds with you, like there's still a big part of that is being able to do, you know, either real-time personalization or accurate segmentation, audience building, that sort of thing.
Exactly. So I would say that it wasn't so much the demand for visualizing data or looking at the data, it was the demand for interpreting data in the way that was helpful for the business. And so the more you've enabled that, the more you've seen it flourish, basically.
For sure. And that, you know, internally we say one of our values is being inspired by data, you know, even at our own
interesting
startup. And it's, that's really how I think about it and how I've thought about it for a long time. Cause it's like it, no matter how, you know, and in a way it relates back to the name of the company as Little Data. It's like, what's the little data that makes the biggest difference, not just more dashboards.
Yeah, it's the 80-20 rule. It's a lot of the, like, you know, one little fact that you could learn about your business or one statistic might be the thing that keeps you going or helps you find some insight that could be a game changer. And so that's so true. And that's a really cool, you know, name origin. Was it always called that, or did it have a different name back in the day?
It was. It was always called Little Data. And in a way, maybe the like meaning of the name has kind of shifted as we've evolved. But yeah, we were lucky that that was the name from the beginning and it kind of stuck.
Yeah. Because you could be like, oh, I just need a little bit of data. You know what? Just the facts. But then at the same time, like once you live in a name long enough, you're going to keep drawing new interpretations. Like, so I totally know what you mean. Like BeMeyer came about as a, you know, as a answer to a problem. But then like I was able to attribute some meaning behind it. And that wasn't like the initial intention, but of course you got to make it mean something. So anyhow, then the other thing that I think you guys do really well and something that is probably like a very hot topic du jour in the e-commerce industry is partnerships. Mm-hmm. So for example, we are an agency partner of Little Data. That's how I got this amazing hoodie that I'm wearing. Shout outs to print on demand companies. But you know, the point I'm making is like partnerships, especially in your world where you're doing deep integrations with platforms. So not just agency partners where, hey, those relationships help create better communication and better relationships for customers, but partnerships with tech companies is probably at the core of a lot of what you're doing because you need access to their APIs. You need to solve challenges that come up. So, I mean, that could be something that I think, you know, what challenges do you face in that realm and how have you overcome them? And I don't mean like, you know, specifics, but just more, what is a way for someone who's starting out to feel like, oh, hey, with my product or service, I don't have to be intimidated by, hey, there's this mega company. How do we get them to give us the time of day or what's the, you know, the right approach for that?
Yeah. Good question. You know, we think about it initially, like I mentioned earlier about like, you know, let's go deep on the big, parts of the typical Shopify stack that everybody uses. So that was obviously Google and then Meta, TikTok, Pinterest are a little bit newer. And now Klaviyo is the first place we're pushing data back because A, we got support from them, but B, it's used by a majority of our merchant, you know, after actually Google Analytics and Meta, it's like the next most common.
And did you approach them or did they approach you?
We approach them. Yeah. And that's a case though where, you know, they've opened up this new app store and we were excited to get in there, but it's also like, I guess partly, you know, we're a little unique because we are a data integrator. So obviously the core of our partnerships need to be where we integrate, but we always poke around a bit and do both user feedback calls and also meet up with partner managers and partnership directors at these different companies to figure things out. And like we now integrate with all of the subscription apps on Shopify, which has been another, you know, core part of what we do.
Smarter, Bold.
Yeah, and Recharge, types, right? Order Groove. And, you know, and like Stay AI has been growing really fast for us. Yes. I think we see ourselves as being the more use cases we can support, the better. And we're always happy to give kind of unbiased views of the tech, but I think it's better for everyone if we support everything. And like actually Shopify locking down the checkout has been really helpful because, and this would go for anyone who's thinking about building an app in the space too. It might seem intimidating and they're being a bit more rigorous with the app store, but it's because they want everything to be, you know, to lead to really fast performing secure sites. And so, you know, I think the app store, Shopify app store is still a great place to build and you'll like naturally build partnerships within that space.
Got it. Cause you'll see, hey, who is in the category I need to target or who, you know, yeah. it's robust. There's a lot of providers, but you can also find new people to reach out to and everyone is probably in a similar boat. So, and then with the subscription apps, because obviously subscriptions is a really big growing segment of the market. Multiple businesses that we work with are doing subscriptions. A lot of it's in the food and CPG space and other types of things with like, you know, where somebody might be ordering the same thing multiple times or exploring a product on a recurring basis. But, you know, and now also Shopify has their own subscriptions API as well. Are you supporting that too?
We do. Yeah. So we track it. We've seen it really only, you know, so far, it's really only caught on with smaller brands. We tend to work with the upper end of Shopify. So I think it's...
I get what you're saying. Like, you support it because it's the APIs, but the same consumer who is using that is the one that's averse to paying for an app because they're like, oh, the platform can do it. Why do I need it? Same reason why they wouldn't understand, you know, why do I need an advanced data, you know, a data foundation platform? And by the way, don't be penny wise and a pound foolish. Like, yes, when you're starting a business, this is advice to merchants out there. Like, yes, when you're starting a business, you have to be cautious about your funds, and we can't all be bleeding heart, put our money on the line without a plan, you know, like some of us here building podcast studios. But the point is, you know, the point I'm making is that sometimes having better tech is a way to stand out from your competitors. If you have a better subscription engine like Smarter, like Stay, like these advanced apps, Bold, 12 years in the ecosystem, market leader, if you actually invest in a better version of the software than what comes out of the box, you can build more robust experiences for customers. And that's my perspective on things like Little Data also. Like, if you're gonna spend tens of thousands of dollars a month giving it to the black box of Google and Meta and these partners, wouldn't you want to have the best version of that data flowing so that you can optimize your campaigns as well as possible? And so to me, I get the value proposition. And so I think it's hard to be a SaaS founder like you and communicate that and find the sweet spot and the price point. And that's really what impresses me about being a SaaS founder is you have to navigate all of these challenges. But like you said, it's all about getting on the phone with your customers, your partners, really listening to the market and not just doing what you think is best, but actually responding to the headwinds as they blow. And so that actually is a really good segue into you brought up Klaviyo and, you know, where the market is trending. And so once again, to our audience out there, you know, Klaviyo is amazing at setting up custom segments and then sending different types of flows and messaging to those segments, both through, you know, email and SMS. And they also grew from nothing in the Shopify ecosystem to become the de facto market leader in email marketing across the board. It's very impressive. We once again, we were working with them since very early stages, but it became like, you know, then it put everyone on notice and now they're going more enterprise too. So it's you know, it's really interesting to see that. And so back to what I was saying about audiences, you used to take your, if I'm not mistaken, your Klaviyo audience data and pipe it into Facebook as a key way of honing your audiences. Like, if you knew who your most engaged customers were and what their data profile was like, you could pipe that to Facebook, build better audiences for your campaigns. And so now taking that one step further, Little Data is helping you collect server-side tracking for your Klaviyo integration, which results in actually better targeting of your emails and your marketing and catching more people in your net, so to speak. And so I would say this is probably driven by a trend, right? Like, you approached them, you said, but you obviously saw an opportunity because of how many brands are using Klaviyo. So maybe share with me and the audience a little more about that and what this does and why it's a game changer. Because to me, I think that is the next revolution, because we are in the age of third-party cookies going away. So if you just rely on third-party cookies, your data is going to get worse and worse and worse. You're going to have gaps, or you're going to have an inaccurate profile of who your users are. And so that's where we see the rise of opted-in user data, which used to be called, you know, zero-party data, first-party data. It goes by many names, but really it's that. It's accurate pictures of information from a source of truth, like either the customer telling you themselves or this server-side tracking, which is what's happening on the back end of Shopify. So why don't you tell us a little more about that and how you got here to the Klaviyo integration and
you're totally right that it's all about kind of, you know, not relying on third-party cookies and doing everything you can with zero and first-party data. And I think a lot of brands hear this stuff and then they get overwhelmed as they start to do research because everybody's saying different things. And now there's all these different AI tools, some of which work and honestly some of which don't. But those like automated personalizations, upsells, all this stuff, that's only as good as the data you're collecting, right? So we took this approach of like, you know, where can we fill in more data And like you said, we've already now for several years been helping brands capture more revenue data. So see if a particular channel or campaign leads to a higher LTV customer over time. Does it lead to refunds or is it whatever? Or higher value ticket sales. And now we kind of move that back and we're like, what about the pre-checkout journey? And what can we do with first party data that could actually improve those audiences while still being privacy compliant? So that's where the Klaviyo integration came from. It's basically a way to, radically increase the audiences. I would say the like targeted high intent audiences for abandoned browse and abandoned cart campaigns. So someone's added something to a cart, but they just didn't purchase, but maybe they'd signed up to a newsletter in the past or found you on social and then came to your site, whatever. We're kind of stitching that stuff together and then you just push it right back into Klaviyo. And like you were saying, use one of even their default flows or, work with a good agency to build out a more complex flow. And then boom, you are essentially marketing to those customers that have much higher intent.
And do people have to turn off any of the default JavaScript integration, like the stuff that comes when you install Klaviyo's connector or Shopify out of the box? Or
good question. Yeah, because we haven't really synced on this yet. We might as well do it live on the podcast, right? So
hey, I'm just at, yeah.
Yeah. No, so essentially with Klaviyo in particular, we're adding new events. So they're actually labeled, add to cart little data. And then you can go in and just create an additional flow using that's triggered by that event.
Got it. So it's enrichment. It's not overwriting or on top of what Klaviyo is default collecting. It's a new set of events.
It's enrichment for sure. Enriching the profile. That's one way to think about it.
You could compare if these two things match, it's even more certain, right?
And how are you seeing, the other way, just a question back for you is we also now via our segment integration, we have a number of merchants on. I think the biggest are probably Braze, Iterable, and Dot Digital for the kind of larger platforms for the much more upmarket brands. And they're using us to do the same kind of thing, but it's going via segment. So they use little data to go from Shopify to segment, and then from segment back to those destinations. Is that a common use case that you're seeing as well?
I would say that that's where you see the more mature companies doing it is when they already have had the foresight to set up these advanced pipes. If you're paying for something, of course you're going to want to use it or figure out how to use it. So I would say that to me represents a specific segment of the population. Whereas a lot of the brands we work with, I don't think they have the sophistication level to even do that. Or even if they are a bigger company, they don't have a dedicated, they may be using Klaviyo. Oh, I'm using the native integration, but they're not all I find it to be a very specific smaller segment of the population that is really, slicing and dicing and trying to optimize to that level versus I feel like a lot of people are just trying to keep up.
That makes sense. And, merchants, I'm still surprised, even as we've gone more up market, that there'll be a $10, $20 million GMV brand, sometimes even bigger, that's still only a couple people running.
Yeah.
All the merchandising in the site. It's
founder, e-com director,
right?
In-house developer. There's not so much robust departments that you would see in these other companies. And then at the same time, I think also when it's a brand that is a manufacturer or a household name, their direct to consumer channels don't always make up the vast majority of their business. So it's not that world is the main focus. And so they often have to do it with a limited budget or a limited set of staff, even though to me and you e-commerce guys, that is your presence to the world, right? That's where anyone says, hey, I'm going to go to such and such brand.com and just look at this. So you would think they'd want that to be the most optimized part of the house.
Yeah. It's constantly changing, right? I mean, it's interesting. Last year we saw, different category trends and alcohol, for example, tended to move more towards wholesale, but the pets category was blowing up and we're still seeing it rise for D2C. So
yeah. Tell me more about alcohol, because speaking of alcohol, I'm about to pop a non-alcoholic drink sip, which is a brand on Shopify. Also the drink sip watermelon refresher wheat, shout outs to drink sip. If you don't know about them, you should, but, I was going to say what did you see in the alcohol industry now that you mentioned it?
Yeah, just exactly that. Actually, I think partly as non-alcoholic has been rising, that category. We've seen more of those, I would say, wine and other kind of creative cocktail companies trying to, I mean, obviously, if they can get into like a traditional retailer, especially, that can become more core of their business. And then the D2C tends to trend down, but like overall, they're going up, right? So it becomes another touch point. But the main problem with alcohol in particular is just the laws about in the US of selling in different states is totally nuts.
Yes, there's the three-tier system,
yeah,
which we could probably do a whole episode about.
That would be a good one, actually. Yeah, we should ping some people.
Yeah, I have definitely got some subject matter experts we could talk to, and I'm sure you do as well. So I know this is a more abridged edition of the e-commerce hotline, unfortunately, because I had a later start today. I want to make sure to ask you, you know, what is some helpful advice you might have for brands and entrepreneurs, since you talk to so many people and, you know, for the audience who's listening, Ari is a very worldly guy, you know, very passionate fellow, but like also very, you know, I feel like you're a calm person, you know, you like you have a lot going on, but you keep it very humble and very focused. And so I would say that to me is very admirable given the face of the magnitude of all the different things you're working on. So like, what is some advice you can offer both Shopify merchants, you know, e-commerce merchants in general, but then also entrepreneurs who maybe want to start a SaaS or co-found a SaaS like you?
Yeah, I think the main thing is, you know, finding out for you and your business and your customers, and it's unique for everybody, it's like, what is that? What are those key 1 to 3 metrics that you want to really watch? It's really back to the basics. And, you know, for ourselves, then we then build OKRs around them. But the second part of it is then don't be afraid to shift. And if you find a new opportunity, that's a really big one, like, you know, and it's just don't be afraid to leap, basically, because especially in our world, anyone thinking of building in e-commerce, not just Shopify, like things move really, really fast. I mean, beyond any other industry I've worked in. I mean, I started out in book publishing, which is probably the slowest, although they have started to evolve. But it's been amazing to me to see just how quickly things happen. And, you know, even like right now, I feel like there's a lot of innovation in the gifting space, gifting, memberships, stuff like that on Shopify. And it's been cool to see how quickly things are moving.
Yeah, I would love to get some of your gift picks to share in the episode notes. Like, hey, what are some cool gifting apps? For sure. And just to summarize that, if you're an e-commerce brand, 1 to 3 pieces of data, the little pieces of data that might be transformative for you. So that way, in a sea of noise, in a sea of things, you know, you pick out that, and that can really help transform your business. And then for the SaaS founders, I think it's the old build it and ship it and iterate along the way. And just for anyone, don't be afraid to take a chance, because, you know, YOLO, right? You only live once. So you got to not rue the missed opportunity. You miss 100% of the shots you don't take. And I would say, you know, as we've started to dabble in more integrations, like we built the AirCall connector for Magento 2, one mistake I feel like I made along the way was not just putting it out as soon as it was even barely ready and then working on bug fixes with the first customers, instead taking extra months to hone it. Because, you know, when you're doing software development as a secondary function versus a primary, it actually takes a lot of time. And then that's time you could have been building demand or building the market. And so, you know, we're seeing that from a lot of founders as well, like just getting their product out there and building in public, which I think might be interesting to you because you've been building for so long that it's probably a different perspective. Like you're probably on like layer 4, layer 5, layer 6, layer 10.
Yeah, yeah. But I like that phrase, building in public, because that's, you know, that's just our approach to software development too, is to be very open and transparent about what we've built, how it works, what can and can't be customized, all that stuff. Because you don't want to be, you know, the more transparent you are, the more value you're going to get, and your customers are going to get, but also
the feedback.
It means that you will attract the right kinds of customers. Yeah,
that's so true. And as someone who's dealt with that, meaning as a buyer, I would say that can be frustrating when you're misled about a product, you sign a contract, and then it's not what you thought it was. And that's two things, because I know we got to wrap up, is one, that's actually the rationale for the e-commerce hotline itself. This was a long-running concept that we can't get into now because we don't have time, but basically the e-commerce hotline, the actual 888-499-ECOM, the catchy jingle, is designed to be something you call when you're in a scenario like that and you need some guidance and you don't know where to turn. It's like an, you know, like not equating it with the real hotlines, which, you know, really are important for the fabric of our life, like suicide hotline, domestic violence hotline, gas emergency hotline. But just like that, in e-commerce, sometimes you don't know where to turn. And sometimes you could just use some friendly advice or an actual solution because you don't have that available in your network. And sometimes just hearing that can make you, you know, get where you need to go. So that's what the e-commerce hotline has settled on. And then last but not least, I always like to ask this question. Are there any causes, you know, life causes, right? Like, I'm a big passionate supporter of heart disease awareness now that I've been going through my own struggle with HCM and learning all about it and trying to make a difference in the e-commerce world by letting people know get screened for heart disease. What about you? Is there any causes that are personal to you that you would like me to spread the word about or, you know, to talk about that you want to share with the audience?
Even if it's not deeply personal. A lot of stuff related to, you know, the oceans and clean water. I think that's, I can pop some links in after, but there's, I've been involved with like Save Our Shores since for many years. And I think that's, you know, the planet is not in a good condition.
Yeah. And also, like, just like humans can make an impact on destroying it, we can make an impact on cleaning it up. Like that New York oyster project is so impressive, what they did with the New York Harbor and actually having oysters come back and the water be clean enough to attract that type of ocean life. So yeah, shout outs to clean water. We all depend on that. And that's actually something that's, you know, affecting my local town right now is there's like, you know, a development being built that could impact the water quality and, all, you know, there's just tributaries and reservoirs and, you know, the water is probably going to be the source of a lot of conflicts over the next, you know, it's already happening. So thank you for enlightening us to that. I just want to say thank you for being on the show. I would love to have you back or, like we said, do a discussion with people around some topics. You know, yeah, thank you for being here today. Ari, would you like to say any last words for the audience here before we wrap on our deadline?
That's, no, that's great. Thanks to you guys for being great agency partners. And, you know, we're the same. I love the concept for e-commerce hotline. And we're also always available. Anyone who has data questions, our team's happy to look, do an audit, whatever, just chat about data because it's.
Yeah. Shout outs to, Yeah. Shout outs to Little Data and their support team and their founder team. You guys are very approachable. And I think that's also really refreshing in this ecosystem is people that just want to help and solve problems. And it's not so, it's regimented, but it's not so blanketed by secrecy. It's just about helping. So I really do appreciate that. Awesome. So yeah, this is the e-commerce hotline. I'm Mayor Bianchi. This is Ari Messer, and we are signing off until next time. Have a lovely rest of your day, and I hope you enjoyed listening. Thank you.
Peace, guys. See ya.
If you need help with e-commerce but don't have time, call the e-commerce hotline. If you need help to make your store shine, call the e-commerce hotline. Your store needs improving, don't deny. Gotta call e-commerce hotline. Call 888-499-3266. Your store will be fine. 888-499-3266. Make your store shine. E-commerce hotline. E-commerce hotline.